Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Hour 2 of Faith Radio Mornings, where we're talking about the different news topics and headlines of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, as we try to navigate so many of the complex and interesting and sometimes difficult, sometimes hopeful issues of the day. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, who do such a great job just bringing guests from around the country, talking about so many of these items from a distinctly Christian perspective. And of course, we do love to hear from you throughout the morning, and at any point you want to call with a question or a comment or a thought based on something that's being said from a guest or me or anything in the program, you can dial in or text the studio at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Well, certainly one of the most well-known journalistic organizations in our country from a Christian perspective is Christianity Today. I've been reading it forever and ever. It was certainly just a paper magazine when I was growing up. Obviously, it has a substantial online presence as well. And thrilled to be joined by Editor-in-Chief of Christianity Today, Mark Galley, this morning. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So I'm curious, as you're preparing in this news cycle and probably the busy buzz of tomorrow with the midterm election cycle, how does Christianity Today sort of prepare, and what do you look at covering for an election cycle like this?
Well, like we like to repeat, it's a mantra in our office. Any issue that we address, it has to be about today, but it also has to be about Christianity. So that means a lot of political stories are not really in our bailiwick. If they're just purely political stories. Now, if they're political stories that touch on social issues that are of high importance to Christians who read Christianity Today, that would be abortion, that would be immigration, that would be religious freedom, then we might have articles on them. But there has to be a distinct relationship to Christianity or to a high Christian value that we purport. So that would be one difference.
It's got to be amazing, too. I know that you bring people from around the country as contributing article authors, and I know you have your own staff, too. I mean, it has to be quite a privilege from your bird's nest view of this to see so many people that can write so articulately about so many of these issues.
Yeah, and the one advantage, we try to be what's called a big tent magazine. That is to say, we have a big view of what evangelicalism is, and that means we will invite people of who have different political views about this matter and that to write in our pages. And that does help us, certainly helps me understand that people with whom I might disagree with politically are nonetheless devout believers, and they have good motives and good biblical reasons for believing what they believe. So that is a big advantage.
It's the voice of Mark Galley, who's the Editor-in-Chief for Christianity Today. And Mark, when we come back from break, we can get into some of these specific topics, including the evangelical response to President Trump and their turnout for the midterm elections, as well as asking the question, is President Trump a modern-day King Cyrus? So more to come with Mark Galley from Christianity Today. It's about 9 minutes past the hour here on the 5th of November, and this is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and thrilled to be joined by Mark Galley of Christianity Today. He's the editor-in-chief of what is a very popular and well-known journal, magazine, news source in our country. And Mark, one of the questions that it seems to be sort of coming up here and there is wondering if President Trump has a bit of a correlation to the ancient King Cyrus of the Old Testament. Remind our listeners who King Cyrus was and why there might be a relationship here between the two.
Well, King Cyrus was an ancient king who, over the land in which the Jews were exiled, and he was the one who decreed that the Jews could return to their homeland. So he was a pagan king who did not share Israel's religion, but actually did things, enacted laws that were beneficial to the Jewish exiles. So the parallel is said to be President Trump has made a big deal about, in particular, religious freedom, especially religious freedom for Christians overseas. He is concerned about the religious freedom of Christians in the United States who feel like they are being marginalized by some recent laws passed, especially in the areas of sexuality and free speech. So some people make the connection between him and King Cyrus.
And related to that, is there the sense in which that this is one pathway forward in which evangelicals can conceive of this situation and say, hey, we understand there are significant moral failings. We don't always agree with the tweets that are sent out early in the morning, but that Trump could be used as an agent for a Christian good in our country.
Yes, and that would be the only thing I would add to that is that that's just true of pretty much of any leader at any given moment. So I wouldn't personally use that as a reason to vote or not vote for a person. I would want to look at their record and see what does she want to do, and does that accord with some political priorities I have as a Christian. And whether the person ends up being called at a later age a type of King Cyrus, that's for history to decide. But in the meantime, I think the issues Christians vote on are quite much more diverse than the news media seems to suggest sometimes.
Well, I think that's really, and you make a great point. It's really interesting, just the idea that you really could look at any presidential figure, Republican or Democrat, and say, hey, look, I understand this person isn't necessarily sharing my faith tradition, but there's certain dimensions of what they bring that really can further the kingdom. Are there specific issues that you see come up over and over and over again for evangelicals that really matter? Obviously, abortion conversation seems to be the biggest, but what are you seeing these days among evangelicals as the fundamental issues that they say relate to the kingdom?
Well, what's interesting is, the common view is, and this is something I've said and written, is that really abortion is one thing that drives their vote, or anti-abortion actually, religious freedom to be able to express their views and live out their views in the public square. That's supposed to be really important. But I've read two different polls now that when asking evangelicals why did they vote in a certain way, the two most important things for them are the economy and security, which are very broad-based moral and ethical concerns that Christians certainly have. Everybody thinks we should have a good economy, that people should be employed. Having a good economy undermines poverty, which we don't like. Every nation is responsible to secure its borders, so that's an important value. So in some ways, when push comes to shove, evangelicals vote very similarly to the rest of the population. Now, we ground our values in biblical truths, but that doesn't mean we can't share those with people who don't share our biblical views.
And so how does a Christian sort this sort of thing out, Mark? I'd be curious your take on this, as I think a lot of believers really do care about those issues that you reference in immigration and the economy, but they get hung up in terms of whether they could vote for a different platform that doesn't support the right to life and the pro-life platform. Does that become a sticking point for many evangelicals in terms of what you've seen?
Yeah, it is true. It depends on any given issue. If you're just really concerned about refugees and immigrants, then it's super, super important that America be a welcoming country. That might play a larger role in your calculus in terms of who you're going to vote for. Abortion would be another one. Some people just cannot bring themselves to vote for a candidate who is liberal on abortion or just seems to treat life in the womb as nothing more than a tissue. So those will sometimes rise to the surface, but most people have, you know, five or six issues that they're very concerned about. And so they have to go into the voting booth weighing and deciding of those six issues, which ones take precedent, and of the candidates that are before me, which ones will support the things I think should be happening from a Christian point of view. And we go in there knowing that it's, democracy is a terrible form of government, but it's the best form of government we've got. Mm-hmm. and you make compromises in order to keep the thing going.
Do you see quite a bit of difference among evangelicals around our country? I mean, I think that we need to make sure that we don't just say that there's one big block called evangelicalism. Is it different from your perspective, evangelicals maybe in the South versus the East Coast or West Coast or part of the Midwest of the United States, different values, different ways of seeing the way forward?
Yeah, I'd say right now the biggest difference is what I'd call elite evangelicals, and I don't mean that disparagingly. I just mean to say they tend to have graduate degrees. They tend to work in white collar work. They tend to be in positions of influence and power. Christianity Today, for example, university, or they work in the government, or they work in some national economic institution. So they are, in a sense, familiar with that kind of class in America, and they tend to think and vote in one way. And then there is more everyday, common, blue-collar, even rural evangelicals. And they tend to see the world in a really different way. So their values are going to be strongly different sometimes. And this is borne out in the last presidential election. People were wondering, how is it that so many evangelicals and so many Americans could vote for a man like Donald Trump, who is clearly a man who has character issues? And it's because they come from, in a sense, two different worlds, and they're looking at him and looking to him, and they're saying two different things often. So yeah, there are big differences. And some of those differences, I think we have a right as Christians to challenge one another as to say, are we really being biblical? But other times it's really a matter of political priorities and values that we just differ on.
And we're talking with Mark Galley, who's the editor-in-chief of Christianity Today this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. And Mark, after we take a short break, I'd love to come back and shift the conversation a bit. I'm sure at Christianity Today, you've had the opportunity to meet and to talk with, or at least have writings from so many influential pastors and theologians in our country over the years. I'm going to ask you some questions about the passing of Eugene Peterson about 10 days ago. And you had a little post as part of a bigger article that was reflecting on the irrelevance of relevance. And I want to ask you more about that when we think about life in the kingdom moving forward here next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here, part of Hour 2 on the 5th of November. We are chatting with Mark Galley, who's the editor-in-chief of Christianity Today, about so many of the different topics in the news. And Mark, certainly about 10 days ago, we saw the passing of Eugene Peterson, and what a significant voice in our country and our faith, and what an impact that he made and a legacy he left behind with so many works, including the Message translation of the Bible. And caught an article that you had contributed to in which you were talking about the idea of relevance and what relevance actually can mean. Kind of talk us through, because it's pretty interesting what you had to say about that.
Yeah, the first time I had an opportunity to hear Eugene was at a pastor's conference in California, and he was teaching on the book of Jonah. And during the question and answer session, one of the pastors asked him, how can pastors become more relevant to the larger world around them? And Eugene got this scowl on his face, and there was a long moment of silence, and then he said, "Relevance. That's a Nazi word." And there were audible gasps among the pastors, because relevance is something we all talk about. Now, what Eugene was talking about was the pandering after relevance to such a degree that the Christian faith just becomes something, really something different. And we are evangelicals. We specialize in relevance. I mean, that's one of the things that makes our movement so great and allows us to reach into the lives and hearts of so many people in so many cultures, because we're gifted with the ability to adapt the faith to those various and sundry social and cultural situations. But of course, that's also, as is the case with many things, our greatest weakness. We tend to become so relevant, it's sometimes hard to recognize the Christian faith that's going on behind it. Many of our worship services, in an interest to appeal to young people who come out of a rock concert environment, end up creating worship services that seem more like a rock concert and less like a worship service. Even people who are involved in that world of contemporary worship admit that this is a temptation. So that's one thing that Eugene brought to the table that was he was a good prophetic voice to say, Let's remember the Lord. Let's remember Scripture. Let's remember the things He's called us to. And let's not let the culture surround us mold us, you know, fashion us in its mold. Let's be the people Christ has called us to be. I think that's one of His greatest legacies.
Yeah, it seems to me that that word relevant has sort of a transcendent quality to it, regardless of time, space, and culture, where the relevance of the truths of the kingdom are relevant for anybody in any time and space. And sometimes we can get confused when we think it's the expression of the kingdom that's relevant as opposed to the truths of the kingdom themselves.
Yeah, one thing he told me in another interview I had with him, he said, you know, in the end, he didn't think people cared if the minister wore robes or not, or wore a collar, or they sang traditional hymns, or they sat in pews, or there were stained glass windows. He said, in the end, most people don't care about that. They just want to go to a place where they are taken seriously and God is taken seriously. And I think he's absolutely right about that. I think sometimes with our worship services, we don't take people as seriously as we might. We tend to appeal to their most superficial needs and desires, when the gospel obviously can address things at a much, much deeper level. And if we can do that, I think, like you just said, people will present the gospel in its fullness and its depth, and people will come.
Well, and it is interesting to me how many people come into church, and sometimes it feels like you almost have to check your intellect at the door. There's a sense in which, as church leaders, we've got to make it really simple, when in the rest of their lives they're often professional people who think deeply and critically about any number of things.
Exactly. I mean, that's a really good point.
And I know you released a book last September, just a little over a year ago, called Karl Barth, An Introductory Biography for Evangelicals. And Mark, what would you say is the importance in terms of relevance of looking at past theological figures, both from the last 100 years, maybe even past 1,000 years, to get sort of their view and take on the kingdom?
Yeah, I mean, the wisdom that God has given His church extends far beyond our current age. And that's the thing I love about reading history and historical theology, is to pick up the wisdom and insights of great figures of other eras. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them or agree with everything they say, but sometimes they bring something to the table that's really profound and needs to be said again. So in the case of Karl Barth, there's a lot to disagree with about Karl Barth, but the one thing he had absolutely right, he was utterly and completely Christocentric. That is to say, Jesus Christ was at the center of everything he thought in theology and wrote and did theologically. And that is, you know, for an evangelical Christian ought to be able to warm up to that, because we want Jesus to be first and last. We want him to be today, tomorrow, and forever. So I just think it's really important for, you know, I agree with C.S. Lewis's advice. For every contemporary book I read, I don't know if I follow this one-to-one, but it's in general, I try to practice, if I read something contemporary, I also want to read something from the classics as well the next time around.
It seems like such great advice. And Mark, I think sometimes in our country, we assume whatever is new, latest, and greatest is also truest and deepest and most right, I suppose. And of course, you know, we see things in technology advance all the way from Model T cars to now blasting off cars into outer space. And we just think, boy, we're really advancing and progressing. And so it's better now than it was. But we do risk losing so much of the richness and depth that has been there throughout Christian history.
Yeah, and one of the things that technology cannot help us with is, of course, the moral and ethical shape of our lives, and especially the spiritual shape of our lives. That seems to be something that we can learn from the past, but every age has to, in a sense, learn afresh who God is and what He's calling me to do with my life. And that just requires not just being relevant or not just having an iPhone and an iWatch. Obviously, it requires a different type of human experience that requires reading, especially of Scripture, prayer, fellowship with other Christians. And that's very low-tech, all that stuff.
Talking with Mark Galley of Christianity Today this morning. Mark, before we run, we got about a minute left or so. What's the one thing maybe you're looking for out of the election results tomorrow relative to our faith?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, obviously, there's great concern about whether Trump and the Republicans will be rebuked in this, or they will be, encouraged by the results. And I think the main thing I get concerned about is whoever is the victor, is they as is human nature, they tend to run with it. I mean, the fact of the matter is Trump, you know, for the Republicans that supported Trump and still do, we have to remember that he actually lost the popular vote. So it isn't like he has a mandate to do anything he wants. And just because, let's say, the Democrats take over the House doesn't mean now they might take it over by 51 or 52%. Doesn't give them a mandate to shove down the throat of everyone else their agenda. I still think in a democracy, and Christians ought to be especially warm to this, there's a lot of give and take. And you probably reported on your show many times the extremism of our culture right now. I think one of the things that Christians can bring to bear on this is, all right, we don't have to agree with everyone, but we don't have to also castigate them, and there might be ways we can work with them. Mm-hmm. And my only concern is that we figure out in this election and future elections, how do we reason together? How do we work together? And as a nation, because as you well know, it's deeply divided right now.
Yeah, that would be the one place if we could see some healing come forth somehow in the next couple of years. It's hard to spot that right now, but Mark, we can pray for those things. And thanks so much for joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings with the perspective that you have.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your ministry. I think it's just a great ministry.
Wonderful. Have a great week, Mark, and we'll take a break here for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News, and we'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman in the second half of this hour to talk about so many of the headlines happening around the world from a Christian perspective. Well, we always love it on Faith Radio Mornings when you as listeners call in or text in the program. And just had a listener comment based on the interview we just had with Mark Galley of Christianity Today that there was a sense in which maybe interpreted incorrectly, but understandably, that Mark was suggesting it was only the elite education class that has the smarts to guide our country among evangelical voters instead of the blue collar class as well. And boy, I'll say this as somebody who has worked in blue collar industry and feels more blue collar than white collar myself. It is often the liberal elite and the educated elite that can stand in the way of the kingdom. Knowledge so often puffs up instead of leading us to repentance, which is always the way forward in the kingdom. So thanks for the comment. Thanks for the question. We love it when you write in and text in like this at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And up next, we'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman, and we'll talk about so many of the global issues from a kingdom perspective on Faith Radio Mornings. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined in studio by Carmen LaBurge, the host of Connecting Faith here on the Faith Radio Network, and she was talking about identity politics and how we segment ourselves from one another when really we need to see that we're all on the same footing.
You know, there are all kinds of identity politics conversations to be had. I think that as Christians, we need to continue to acknowledge that all people, regardless of their nationality, are all created equal. But that's a equal creation in the image of God. And we don't do a very good job, no matter where we live or in any generation, of treating one another as fellow image bearers. And so I think that we have to be careful in our language, and we have to be quick to say, look, every person stands on equal footing at creation, at the cross, and in the kingdom.
Great to have Carmen in studio last Friday. If you want to catch all of what she had to say in her segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com. And when you do, you can go to her show as well and her show page. She has great guests day in and day out that she is able to ask a lot of questions and get in deep with over the course of an hour or so in a program. So myfaithradio.com. When we take a break here in just a minute, we'll be joined after that by Dr. David Aikman. And I'm going to ask David about the pending retirement of Angela Merkel and sort of the shock waves that will send through Europe moving forward.
In working with families, I often find myself reining in well-meaning parents. Sometimes their good intentions push them to extremes, and nobody wins. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I once met a mom who seized every teachable moment throughout the day. By the time her children were late teens, they'd been corrected and lectured so many times, they virtually shut down inside. Not every teachable moment has to become a soliloquy on life. How many times are you taking your kids to school on some obscure lesson? If it's once a day or more, you might be overdoing it. Wait for those rare moments when your kids are ready to listen and you're calm and ready to coach. In those moments, everybody wins.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. And, of course, that intro means that Dr. David Aikman is joining us. He's a former journalist with Time Magazine for the better part of 20 years. And now I understand, David, that you simply must not be able to retire here because you are the editor of Godspeed Magazine. Are you holding out on us about your journalistic career, David?
No, I decided that I don't think retirement is biblically sound. I don't know anybody who retired in the Bible. So I thought, well, if I'm claiming to be a believer, I should probably follow what the Bible suggests.
That's great.
So I'm trying to keep active.
Well,
as
I love it.
As possible.
Yeah, well, definitely. Tell us just quickly about Godspeed Magazine. What's sort of the emphasis of the work here?
Well, it's a monthly digital magazine. In other words, you can't buy it in the shops. You have to go online, godspeedmagazine.online, and it basically shows the extraordinary things that the Almighty is doing in different parts of the world through different communities, different individuals, different movements that are all stirring up a presence of God's grace in the world. It's an amazing thing.
Well, I can't wait to see and read this, David. I'm so glad you're doing this work and certainly covering things from a global perspective. You bring such a unique and important voice into the program. And I was curious your thought when you saw some of the headlines around Angela Merkel stepping down. I mean, this really, she's sort of the last of these extremely visible leaders as part of a globalization era. And certainly she and President Obama were sort of the head of a globalization movement. And it's really shifting, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, The Guardian newspaper in the UK had an article essentially bemoaning what it calls right-wing groups that are resisting this globalist trend. But if you think about it, many Americans in 2016 voted for Donald Trump, not only because they thought he would do a better job than Hillary Clinton, but because they resented the assumption that the whole world was going to become part of some vast multilateral community, probably run to some degree by the United Nations. And Trump's sort of Make America First pronouncement really resonated at the UN when he said, I want every country to make itself first. And lo and behold, we have the biggest country in South America, Brazil, not only voting a conspicuous conservative into power, but actually following Trump's example of moving its embassy into Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. I mean, this is an astonishing development.
It is phenomenal to see so many countries looking back towards their own sovereignty and sense of culture and things shifting back a bit. David, in your perspective, what do we risk losing if we move back towards more of a nationalistic kind of world order versus some of the things where there's some positives about globalism that we risk losing at this point?
Well, I don't think we necessarily lose anything by becoming individually more nationalistic. I just think each country ought to be sovereign rather than subordinate to a multilateral organization telling it what to do, as the EU does with so many European countries. I think we would lose something if people didn't realize that globally we do need a forum of mutual discussion, whether it's the United Nations or other forums, and that no nation, even after recovering its own sovereignty, can become completely isolated from the rest of the world. But it has to work out a way of cooperating and operating with other countries.
And I know certainly the message of President Trump that, we didn't elect him to give over leadership to people in Brussels that have been unelected by the United States. Does that kind of message resonate in some of these European countries as well?
Oh, very much so. In Poland, particularly in Hungary, in Italy, there's a groundswell of opposition to the idea that an unelected bureaucracy in Brussels can basically determine the policy that is supposed to be operated by every country within the EU. And people resent that. And one of the things the EU does is that if a country votes in a certain direction, which the EU doesn't like, the EU can say, well, we want you to vote again, which they did with Ireland, and they have done with several countries, until the country comes around and obeys what the EU wants. So there's a feeling that among many people that this so-called panacea of a European-wide governance is not in the best interest of individual countries.
Well, and what is the rationale? If you were more of a globalist, David, what would be the rationale for saying this is going to make better lives for people within individual countries? I don't hear a lot of the rationale underneath it, how globalism really helps everybody within a single country.
Well, the assumption by globalists is that the more widespread network of organizations controlling major economic and social decisions in different countries there are, the better it will be for everybody else. But I think the analogy is that under the United States Constitution, although we have a federal government to which the states give their allegiance and they pay their tax operations and so on, the states themselves have a great deal of individual autonomy. And although the European Union is not modeled on the American federal system, I think a lot of European countries wish that they had the same authority over their own societies as American states have over their citizens' rights.
And do we see anybody stepping into the void of leadership now that Merkel is stepping down? You hear Macron's name out of France every once in a while, but his approval rating is abysmal. Is this sort of the end of that era?
Well, it's hard to say whether it's the end of the era. Macron is a very gifted politician. Let's face it, he was only, I think, 40 years old when he was elected president. He's a young man with a lot of energy and a lot of brain power. But I think the sweep of European politics is not moving towards a recovery of a unified federal view of European life as it should be, but is moving to a slightly more singular view of individual countries reasserting their traditional state sovereignty as they used to have.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating, not just tomorrow's cycle of elections, but the next couple of years as well, where we see sort of this tug and war between nationalism and globalism. David, we'll take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll change the conversation to some headlines coming out of Latin America, where a U.S. National Security Advisor, John Bolton, labeled Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua as the troika of tyranny. And I'll ask you about some of these headlines coming out of Latin America next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 5th of November, and we are talking with Dr. David Aikman about some of the global headlines and just ways as Christians to think about so much of what's happening in our world. And David, I saw that the U.S. National Security Advisor, John Bolton, said that Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua are the troika of tyranny. This sort of reminds me of the axis of evil that we've seen. What's happening in Latin America right now?
It does indeed remind you of the axis of evil. Well, I don't think in one sense anything is really new. I mean, Cuba has always been the bad boy in the American backyard from the point of view of American administrations, no matter who is in the White House. But Venezuela has played a role not only in financing Cuba with oil at greatly reduced prices, but actually organizing, I don't think terrorist operations, but cooperation with leftist groups in various countries that are very harmful to the security in general of the Latin American, of the Hispanic part of the hemisphere. So, and Venezuela, in addition, has played all kind of games with Putin's Russia. So the implication is that Cuba has been the bad boy. It wanted to offer to Russia submarine bases that would give Russia tremendous power in the Caribbean, in America's backyard, and is willing to accept alliances with strange people or unexpected allies like China and Iran. I mean, it's a remarkable situation for a country that used to be one of the wealthiest in Latin America and is now absolutely hovering close to the brink of poverty and impoverishment and malnutrition for most of its citizens. It's a very sad situation.
It is a sad situation, and I think it ties into the caravan headlines as well, where so many people are fleeing countries where there's such corruption and there's such turmoil and lack of opportunity and possibility. And David, what do we see coming out of Latin America, Central and even South America? And is Brazil maybe positioned to chart a different pathway forward now with a new kind of leadership in place?
Well, I think the situation in Brazil is very interesting. And as usual, I think it's been completely misreported in both the United States press and the European press. I mean, the lazy epithet, he's a right winger or he's in the far right, completely obscures what Bolsonaro, for his part, represented in this election. What he actually represented, amongst other things, was the views of several of the millions of Brazilian Protestant Christians who deeply regret the progressive moves of the Brazilian government socially and economically in the last few years, not to mention the pervasive corruption of the leftist regimes. And they want to sort of return to a more orderly society, as they think. For example, let's make Brazil great again. They want to make Brazil morally great again. And they've done that in one sense by moving the Brazilian embassy to Jerusalem, which completely contradicts the overall Latin American trend to follow the UN tendency of not giving much recognition of Israel's needs in its struggle with terrorism and other forces.
It's fascinating. We have about 30 seconds left, David. I mean, I remember when the United States moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and there was concern there'd be war that would break out between the Jews and the Arabs, but that sort of just disappeared into the background within about 3 days, it seems.
Well, it did. I mean, the threat that there would be terrible problems if the embassy was moved turned out to be completely false. The United States didn't suffer any particular consequences from that, nor did Trump's Middle East policy. Whatever you think of its various aspects, the fact is he has continued to operate without fear of retribution by the global community.
Well, David, thanks so much, as always, for joining us, as you do here on Mondays on Faith Radio Mornings. And we love that you are not retired, that Godspeed magazine is in process. So have a great week ahead, and we'll definitely see what you're writing about here.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to being back again. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We'll take a break here, and we'll wrap up our show for the morning on the 5th of November on Faith Radio Mornings. I love the single syllable laugh of David Aikman when something tickles his funny bone and just the perspective and the wisdom he brings these mornings. Thanks again for listening here on a Monday morning. It's always delightful to be with you. And tomorrow we'll pick up all these conversations again while we fix our eyes on Jesus in the news of the day.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.